Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as we're about to get into 30 issues in 30 days with the topic that caused the greatest round of applause at the Barack Obama convention speech in Denver. So Joe the Plumber wasn't the only regular person who came up in last week's presidential debate. Another who we are about to meet was Lilly Ledbetter.
Senator McCain and I disagreed recently when the Supreme Court made it more difficult for a woman named Lilly Ledbetter to press her claim for pay discrimination. For years, she had been getting paid less than a man had been paid for doing the exact same job. And when she brought a suit saying equal pay for equal work, the judges said, well, it's taken you too long to bring this lawsuit, even though she didn't know about it until fairly recently. We tried to overturn it in the Senate. I supported that effort to provide better guidance to the courts. John McCain opposed it.
So this hour, 30 issues in 30 days, issue 21, equal pay for equal work. And we kick off this segment with the woman who you just heard Barack Obama mention by name, Lilly Ledbetter. Senator McCain did not respond specifically on her, but as you might have heard, Ms. Ledbetter was a manager in a Goodyear plant in Gadsden, Alabama. A jury found that Goodyear discriminated against her in pay, giving her smaller raises than her male counterparts, and awarded her $3 million in damages. But last year, in a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court threw out that award, ruling that Ms. Ledbetter had filed her complaint too late. The Ledbetter versus Goodyear ruling led to Lilly Ledbetter pay equity bills in Congress, which failed to pass the Senate earlier this year. Ms. Ledbetter herself joins us now from her home in Alabama. Lilly Ledbetter, thanks for taking a few minutes for us. Hello from New York.
Good morning. I'm just delighted to be here. Anytime I can have an opportunity to speak up for all the women and minorities across the country, I'll be happy to do so, and thank you for having me.
So the Supreme Court ruled against you because your complaint was filed too late. Do you think women in today's workplace face the same sorts of discrimination that you did?
I know they do, because I have heard their stories all across the country as I have traveled to get support for this bill. I have heard their stories, and some of them are really heart-wrenching to hear their stories and how they're struggling to support their families, their children, and themselves. Oftentimes, they're even supporting a handicapped husband, or they're supporting they're divorced, or maybe their spouse is deceased. It's just an epidemic. I thought originally this was probably just a Southern problem, but it's not. It's all across the country, and it doesn't only include like first-line managers such as I was. It includes the professionals. It's in the doctors. It's in the medical. It's in the college professors. It's in the all across the country where women are being denied equal pay for equal work.
Well, how did it work? And people will debate, and we'll have two more guests who will debate whether that's really true, that doctors and college professors and others are getting unequal pay by gender. But how did it work in your case? How did Goodyear manage to pay you less than a guy who is doing the same job as you? And how did you figure it out?
I only figured it out when someone left me an anonymous note in my mailbox at work showing my name and the three males that we four had done or were doing the exact same job. And then I had some concrete information. Up until that time, I didn't know. I didn't have any way of knowing, because at Goodyear, pay was strictly confidential, because you never discussed your pay. If you did, we had been told when we hired in we wouldn't work there. So no one ever discussed their pay, raises, or anything of that sort.
Who tipped you off?
I have no idea. But it was someone who felt like I needed to know, and they were exactly right, but maybe they were late. I don't know, but I certainly don't feel like I was, because, and why I'm fighting so hard for this, and I'm not a lawyer, but I have learned that all through the years, 9 of the 12 districts had always followed the paycheck accrual rule. But the Supreme Court decided that that wasn't good enough anymore, and they ruled against me in my case, which basically changed the ruling.
So, in other words, you found out too late to file under the statute of limitations. What was
not
the...
really, because see, up until my case, they had been, 9 of the 12 districts had gone by the paycheck accrual rule, and there have been other cases that have gone to the Supreme Court that was ruled in favor of, the same as mine.
What does that mean, the paycheck accrual rule?
That's if you're still receiving a paycheck when you file your charge, you can still go back 180 days from that check. And remember, too, that the law is on the book that when you file these charges, you can only get equal pay for 2 years. That's all it covers. I couldn't go back 18 years like I would like to have for equal pay. I could only go back 2 years.
So that's all
anyone's ever allowed, and that was before, and that's still current today.
And you weren't even allowed the 2 years.
That's exactly right.
So are you hoping that the next Congress will pass a bill that will change this for other women?
I believe that they will. I don't really hope. I think I know they'll have to because, you know, equal pay passed in 1963 and Title VII in 1964, and this should not be an epidemic, you know, this far in 2008 that we're still working toward equal pay for equal work. And I just recently met a doctor in New York that settled with the state of New York because she was being paid in a university for her teaching skills 50% of what the males were getting. And she is an ENT pediatric surgeon, and she also has a private practice and works in a hospital.
Do you still work for Goodyear?
No, sir. I went ahead and retired in 1998. I had filed my charge about a year before I retired, and then I retired in November of 1998, and I filed my charge early in 1998.
Lily Ledbetter, good luck to you. You are a national symbol to many people as much as Joe the Plumber. And
I hope more than Joe the Plumber, because I understand Joe the Plumber doesn't even have a license to be a plumber.
Lily Ledbetter, who, by the way, we should say with partisan disclosure, did speak at the Democratic National Convention in August about her plight. Senator Obama did vote for the so-called Lily Ledbetter pay equity bill, and McCain voted against it. Is that correct?
Well, he didn't show up. He said had he made the trip back, he was he and Hillary and Senator Barack Obama all were on the campaign trail, and Senator Obama and Senator Clinton both came back to vote on it and speak for it. Senator McCain said had he even showed up, he would have voted against it.
All right, and we'll debate out whether that would have been the right thing to do on either of their parts coming up. 30 issues in 30 days, issue 21, equal pay for equal work. Lily Ledbetter, so nice to talk to you. Good luck to you in retirement.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. And I'm just fighting for all of the women and minorities out there working and supporting their families today. This bill will never do me not one penny's worth of good, but it is time, and I want to speak up for them on their behalf, and I appreciate you having me so very much.
Thank you. Brian
Lehrer
on WNYC. Issue 30 in 30 days. Issue 21, equal pay for equal work. And when Barack Obama made his acceptance speech at the Democratic convention in Denver, it surprised many of us who were there when this line got what arguably was the biggest applause of the night.
And now is the time to keep the promise of equal pay for an equal day's work, because I want my daughters to have the exact same opportunities as your sons.
And the applause continued on from there. But he's not the only candidate who's on board with the idea, at least in theory. Here is Senator McCain speaking in July at a town hall meeting in Wisconsin.
We haven't done enough. We have not done enough. And I'm committed to making sure that there's equal pay for equal work, that there is a equal opportunity in every aspect of our society and our economy. And that is my record, and you can count on it.
an applause line from Democrats and Republicans alike. So both candidates agree that there is a wage gap. Where Obama and McCain disagree is on how to close it. And here now to talk about this are two guests, Carrie Lucas, Vice President for Policy and Economics at the Independent Women's Forum and the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Women, Sex, and Feminism. And also here is Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, Democrat from New York, whose district covers Manhattan's Upper East Side and Astoria, Queens. So, Carrie Lucas, welcome to WNYC, and Congresswoman Maloney, welcome back. Hello.
Hello.
Carrie Lucas, you think that the idea of legislating equal pay for equal work has lost relevance. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to talk about is understanding the magnitude of the wage gap and how some of the rhetoric, I think, overstates the problem. And my real concern is makes women feel disempowered and tries to convince us that we're all victims. Because you hear this statistic repeated all the time that women make 77 cents on the dollar, which is taken from a Department of Labor a statistic that they put out there. But what that statistic doesn't take into account is the many different decisions that men and women make about work. Women tend to work fewer hours. Even women who are considered full-time work less hours a day than men do in the office. Men and women take off different amounts of time for work. Women tend to drop out of the workforce to care for kids for years at a time. And that, of course, ends up affecting how much you end up getting paid. Women and men also gravitate towards different types of jobs. Once you start controlling for some of these factors, the wage gap disappears, or it doesn't entirely disappear. There's still a small difference at the end, and that's something we should be concerned about and should make sure that there are protections against true discrimination. But I think it's really misleading and counterproductive for women's advancement to try to pretend that we're still making 75 cents on the dollar for the same work, because it's just not borne out by the facts.
So, Carolyn Maloney, how do you see those statistics? And in, you know, people, the different contexts of men's and women's lives, as Carrie Lucas was just putting it.
Well, I'd say that, first of all, equal pay is not just a woman's issue. It's a family issue. And over 40% of women are their family's sole earner, and many more contribute a significant share, up to a third, if not more, to their family's income. So if you discriminate against a woman, you discriminate against her family. And during this time of a painful economic downturn, the wage gap is particularly painful to women. Most studies show that women still earn only 78 cents for every dollar men make, so it takes them nearly 16 months to earn what men make in a year for doing the exact same work. Now, a study that was done that I commissioned with John Dingell in 2003 with the Government Accountability Office, that's a nonpartisan organization, showed that when you factored in the items that Carrie mentioned, such as occupation, marital status, job tenure, taking time off to take care for a sick child or whatever, there was still a 20 cents unexplained differential between men and women. The study showed there was a 40% differential, but after you factored in having children, taking care of sick parents, possibly working a shorter week, there was still a 20% unexplained differential.
So you'll disagree on some of the numbers, but...
And I'd also say the AAUW report says the same thing, and that...
American Association of University Women...
The pay gap. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Carrie.
If I may, the AAUW study is actually, it's really interesting, because while all the headlines repeated the 77 cents on the dollar, even in that study, and these are loud advocates for the idea of the wage gap, they said three-quarters of the wage gap was explained by these differences in lifestyle decisions, different jobs, different amount of time. So they had it that the wage gap was only about 5% was mm-hmm. left. Between 5 and 8% was left when you control for those factors.
So let me get to what policy should be.
Actually, Congresswoman... in their report on page 2, they say behind the wage gap examines the gender pay gap for college graduates. 1 year out of college, women working full-time earn only 80% as much as their male colleagues. 10 years after graduation, women fall farther behind.
And does that also have to do that first year?
Earning only 69% as much as men, and I'm quoting from their report, their executive summary on page 2. So so.
Okay, well, if you had about 10 pages, but had about 15 pages later in that study, you'll see when they say, and then we controlled for these factors, the different choices that men and women make. Even in college, women and men tend to gravitate towards different areas of study. And at the end of that year, they're still making different decisions. Women tend to do things like become teachers, go into humanities. A lot of men are out there taking jobs like becoming truckers and sanitation workers.
Carrie Lucas, are those different choices even in college because women know that they're going to be the ones who are called on to raise the children in their families?
Quite possibly. I know that when I was making those decisions, and I'm now a mother of two, and I'm work at home, so I'm certainly not making as much money as I could today, but I traded higher salary for a better work life, which I know a lot of women out there make these choices.
So,
I certainly thought about it in college, and I thought about it in my young career, even 10 years before I had children. So I think a lot of women go through that same thought process.
So there's definitely
if you take that into account, there's still an unexplained wage discrimination. And even using the numbers that she said, if you take in all of these other factors, there is still a 5% differential 1 year after graduation and 12% after 10 years. That's still a 12% pay cut, which is significant to most people. And so I think there it is undisputable that there is a discrimination out there. And Brian, if I could add, if you just drive your Mitsubishi to the airport after filling its tank at Sunoco, board a Boeing-built plane for a United Airlines flight, contract with Verizon for cell phone service to call your family before you take off, then bite into a Krispy Kreme donut, you've just enriched six household name companies that have settled or lost sex discrimination lawsuits
in recent years.
My book, Brian, Rumors of Our Progress Are Greatly Exaggerated, Why Women's Lives Are Not Getting Any Easier, and What You Can Do to Make a Difference. And one of the things you can do is pass the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act.
Which is exactly what I wanted to ask you about next. What about the policy level for any of this? Some of this has to be fought at home. You supported the Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. You've authored reports on the glass ceiling. Why, and the book, why do you think legislation is the remedy?
Well, I'd say that it speaks volumes that in the 21st century that we have to pass this law. Basically, the Supreme Court overturned the ability for Lilly Ledbetters of this country that have been discriminated to be able to bring suits. They capped it to 180 days or 6 months. Well, discrimination is discrimination, whether it happened yesterday or 6 months ago. And so it basically limited the ability of men or women discriminated against to bring suits for just pay. And this is totally unfair. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in her decision, said that it needed a legislative fix and it needed to clarify. And in the law, we make each paycheck a infraction or a time that the suit can be brought. Right now, Brian, it's almost a guarded state secret what salaries are. So many people, even some firms, have laws that say or policies that you can't ask your coworkers what they're being paid. So there's no way that you know. Lilly worked there for 18 years. Years before one of her co-workers just slipped a note in her locker and told her that she was paid less than any male manager doing the same job, including the younger men were paid much more, and her seniority didn't count.
And before you came on, we just heard from Lilly Ledbetter herself. And when John McCain was asked at a town hall meeting in May why he didn't support the Lilly Ledbetter Act, here's what he said.
I think you're referring to a vote recently that would allowed, which would have eliminated the statute of limitations on lawsuits for charges or allegations of discrimination. I think that if you eliminate the statute of limitations and make it unending, then you have maybe violating the rights of the individual who's being sued as well, whether they be a man or a woman.
Carrie Lucas, do you agree with John McCain's position there? Because when we heard Lilly Ledbetter a few minutes ago, this was obviously so galling to her, the fact that she was able to prove that she was discriminated against in pay, that a court, in fact, found that she was discriminated against in pay. And even though she was still working for the company at the time, Goodyear, she wasn't able to sue and get her back pay because the statute of limitations had run out.
I think that this is, you know, anytime you have a decision or a policy about when to allow litigation or the how to bring charges against someone, whether it's for a crime or for an act of discrimination, there has to be some time limit because memories do fade. And I think that there is a legitimate concern that, you know, perhaps I agree that I think 6 months seems awfully when Congress created the law that allowed the statute to only be 180 days. That does seem awfully short. To me, I think that there probably ought to be a legislative remedy to increase that statute, but making it essentially, this could be, now people under, if this becomes law, if the Lilly Ledbetter Act becomes law, companies would be open to discrimination suits that may have been made by decisions of people who are long since dead, you know, 30 years ago. It's impossible then to defend themselves, and this could become a trial lawyer bonanza. And I know that people in general, the audience listening is probably thinking, who cares? You know, these companies, they've got deep pockets and it doesn't matter. They should.
Or another way to look at it, Carrie, is that those companies would have continued to make money off that money that they unfairly withheld from the female workers, and the female workers' family finances would have suffered all these years.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, no law is going to be perfect in the same way that I know there's a lot of people out there who get sued and have their lives ruined and have companies go bankrupt because of frivolous lawsuits. So this is always going to be a balancing act. Somebody, you know, my heart goes out to Lilly Ledbetter. It sounds like she got a terrible, terrible deal, and I understand how frustrating it is. But we can't have just open the world up to endless lawsuits, because let's remember that when we have frivolous lawsuits, which we have many of, it ends up costing other people their jobs and their livelihoods, too. So this is a balancing act.
Carolyn Maloney, go ahead and answer that.
Hollow because the bill contains a provision to limit claims filed to a two-year maximum. So in the spirit of negotiation, proponents had to limit potential awards. And the bill merely returns to law how the vast majority of the states interpreted it before the Supreme Court decision turned the law backwards and limited it to 180 days.
How would the bill have limited awards?
Because it would be to a two-year maximum. So when she brought her suit, it would just cover 2 years. It would not go back to the full 18
I see. So
years.
Even if she was discriminated against for 18 years in pay, she could only get 2 years of the back pay difference.
Yes, that was a compromise that we put in the bill.
As she had mentioned, too. So are there other policy areas, Congresswoman Maloney, where you think Senator Obama and Senator McCain disagree with respect to equal pay for equal work? This is a statute of limitations issue. Are there other issues before the Congress with respect to this?
Well, there are other issues. I do want to mention that we have worked together, Carrie and I have worked together on the sex trafficking bill and cracking down on sex trafficking, and her organization has been an important proponent for my legislation to achieve that end, and I thank her for that. But I would say that we're in the 21st century. Why can't we pass the Equal Rights Amendment? Why can't we pass the CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination? Every single country in the world has ratified that treaty except for the United States and seven others. We're in company with Iran and a few others.
What would the treaty do?
The treaty merely speaks about empowering women with education and health care and dignity. When I first heard we hadn't ratified it, I thought maybe it included, the choice argument. But it doesn't even touch choice. It talks about empowering women and their children through education and health care. Our country should ratify that treaty.
Carrie Lucas, are you opposed to that treaty ratification?
You know, I don't think that has any relevance to the larger equal pay issue and some of the legislation here that's being considered in the United States, because there actually are some other laws that, you know, if the Democrats increase their control in Congress, and then Senator Obama becomes President Obama, that definitely might get some head of steam. These are some of the bills that Hillary Clinton championed with really empowering the federal government to have more of a hand in managing or overseeing how wages are set and and have more oversight in those things. And I think that is the type of thing that women should be concerned about, because some of these regulations and some of this, the greater potential for lawsuit could dry up the very flexibility that so many women out there crave.
We're going to run out of time.
I'd like to say that Hillary and I just released a report on federal agencies showing that they were not monitoring or enforcing anti-discrimination laws. So we have taken steps in trying to get more responsibility there.
So
we need to change attitudes, and certainly discrimination is discrimination. We should not limit someone and cap their opportunity to right a wrong.
You know, there's an article in
Statute of Limitations on a wrong.
Article in today's Daily News, quoting research from the Journal of Applied Psychology, that says gender role attitudes have substantial effects on pay equity, not just for women, but for men as well. For example, men who believe women should focus on their life at home rather than on their careers earned an average of $8,500 more a year than those men who don't. So it affects both sexes. We've just got 2 minutes left. Congresswoman, should the focus perhaps not be on mandating equal pay alone, but on passing legislation that makes the workplace more family-friendly, upgrades to the Family and Medical Leave Act? I've seen research that shows 40% of working mothers lack both sick and vacation leave and things like that. Is that an error? Just give me one minute.
Absolutely. And I have a series of bills in that would expand the Family and Medical Leave Act to cover visits to doctors and with teachers, and I have legislation in with Senator Kennedy for flex time that wouldn't cost a dime. Carrie, you should get behind this one. It merely says you can negotiate with your employer a flexible work program. It's working very well in England and other countries.
Carrie, how about that for a last word? Then we've got to get ready for our next guest on this.
I think we just need to be really careful, because there are a lot of companies out there who recognize it's good business to be family friendly, but the second government comes in here and starts trying to encourage it, it ends up creating new costs for businesses and can backfire on women.
All right. Carrie Lucas from the Independent Women's Forum. Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney from New York, also the author of Rumors of Our Progress Have Been Greatly Exaggerated, Why Women's Lives Aren't Getting Any Easier, and How We Can Make Real Progress for Ourselves and Our Daughters. Could you have given that a longer title, please, Congresswoman?
We've got to change that 77 cents to the dollar.
Thank you both very much. And we're going to look next at the case of Sweden. Scandinavia has a whole other approach to equal pay for equal work and family-friendly policies. We'll check it out. And with us now is Inger Arenander, senior political commentator for Swedish Radio. Welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thank you. Hello from the west coast of Sweden.
I hear that despite equal pay laws there, women still earn about 20% less than men in Sweden, too. Why is that?
Well, it's a good question, because we've been working on it for a long, long time. And even though if you consider age, education, what kind of sector you work in, what kind of profession you have, there's still a difference of 7%. So women have 93% of men pay for equal professions, I'd say. So there's still a difference. But there is a difference because of, I don't know, tradition and prejudice, I guess.
What Sweden does have that's very different from the United States is very generous family leave policies, especially for parents with newborns. Explain how that works and how you think it plays into pay equity.
Well, it works like this, that you have 18 months leave from work, of which 15 are fully paid. You get the same salary almost as you have when you're working, and the three last months are less paid for, but still you can take off from work. And two of these months are compulsory, either for the man or the woman. So the man has to stay at home for 2 months to get the full pay, so to say. And there's also an equality bonus that is supposed to get the man to stay home for a longer time with the child. And the idea is to take care of your child, to be with your child, to support your child. And the daycare system after that is also very generous. And the idea is to get women mainly to be able to work outside their homes.
Do you think that this is contributing to pay equality in Sweden? Because you still have that 20% less stat. I don't know if that's smaller than in the United States.
Well, I don't know either. I checked the statistics just before talking to you, and it's 16%. But even though it's a lot. It's a lot. No, I think the system has the way we have of having a generous system for taking time off from work when having a child, or especially the daycare system we have that is very inexpensive compared to the United States. You pay for one child about $200 a month, and it's a capped tax so that you never pay more. So it's very inexpensive. And the idea from the very beginning is that women should be able to work outside of homes because, you know, we have a large sector paid for by taxes for daycare and hospitals and what have you. So
and Sweden,
mainly female working there. So it's to make them able to get out of their homes to work there.
And Sweden has had an Equal Pay Act since 1979. Did that change things very much?
Very, very slowly. And the idea here is, the system is different from the United States, I guess, but the idea here is that there is no lawmaker who decide that the pay here is a system of collective bargaining. So it's a bargaining between the unions and the employers, and they set a deal, and that's how it works here. So there's no way the lawmakers can decide.